Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. San Francisco's Chinatown of the 1800s is the setting for Warriors. Cinemax's Bruce Lee-inspired new adventure saga that unfolds tonight. Creator executive producer Jonathan Chopper joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. Broadcast.io is Urban Movie Channel's latest series sensation, up for 3 Daytime Emmy Awards as Season 2 rolls on. Here are creators Dan Garcia and Michael Mayhall next half hour. Emmy rocked today's guest roster with a pair of top scripted TV composers, Emmy Award winner from Fargo, Jeff Russo, and the Toothmaker at NBC's This Is Us, Siddhartha Khosla. Also ahead, News No Quickies, our new classic trivia question, and an MIP mystery. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, proud government partner of the annual New York Television Festival, and the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Remember, you can listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get three free audiobooks when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Happy 5th of April to you and all, and welcome on this Friday afternoon to the program All About Television. 90-day edition ahead for you, 41 degrees and on-off showers here in the Big Apple at the top of the hour, and we invite you to be part of the program. All it takes, you raise your voice, you pick up the phone, and you use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. We've got our chat room in business, SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And guest 223 is in the room. And while the program is on the air, you can connect to us by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk or Spreaker screen, and you can get right involved with other people, and they can be live with you. Jonathan Trucker, first from Banshee, now with Warrior, joins us live from Los Angeles after these news notes. Netflix has finalized its ensemble cast for Gentrified, a dramedy set in the Boyle Heights section of Los Angeles, and co-executive produced by superstore star America Ferrera. In other news note quickies, Discovery Channel and Science Channel will share the presentation of a new series next month. Masters of Disaster tracks a team of mechanics looking to upkeep vintage objects unusable in worst-case scenarios. 6 episodes start playing on Discovery May 3rd. Vikings creator Michael Hirst is developing a Dr. Zhivago miniseries. That's right, sort of adapted viewer from the famous book and movie. 8-hour-long episodes are in play. And the Kathy Lee Gifford co-host era came to an end on Today This Morning. Gifford co-hosted the mid-morning NBC Hour for 11 years. Good luck to her in all her future endeavors. And that is news notes for today. Over the last decade, Cinemax has become known for a series of very popular, very stylish, and very well-produced action-adventure hours. Programs like Strike Back, Outcast from Robert Kirkman, and the critically acclaimed produced here in New York, The Nick. Well, there's a new one aboard, and it starts tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. It's called Warrior. It is inspired by the writings of Bruce Lee, and the person who put another major show on the air for Cinemax, Banshee, who was with us at the time, is back with us today. Joining us live in Los Angeles, the creator, executive producer of Warrior, and an internet radio exclusive, Jonathan Chopper. Jonathan, welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So how did you and the writings of Bruce Lee come together?
I was finishing up Banshee for Cinemax, and they knew I was a huge Bruce Lee fan, and I guess right around then, Justin Lin and Shannon Lee had come to Cinemax with this Bruce Lee treatment, and so the guys at Cinemax called me up and said, you know, we know you love Bruce Lee. His daughter was in here, and she's got this thing he wrote. Do you want to look at it? And so as soon as I got to L.A., I had a meeting with Justin and Shannon, and I read the pages.
Did both of you, Justin, and you know that Bruce Lee did try to, back in the 1970s, put a TV series on the air? And as it turned out, he wasn't involved, but the show did go on called Kung Fu with David Carradine, which had a terrific run on ABC.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm going to be careful here. You know, Warner Brothers and the creators of Kung Fu certainly claimed that that was an original idea and did not come from Bruce Lee's pitch. So I'm not going to stand here and tell you that's exactly what happened. What did happen was Bruce Lee pitched a show to them about a kung fu artist who comes over from China to the West, and they basically told him that Americans would never respond to a Chinese leading man, and they didn't buy the show. And a year later, Kung Fu came out. Those are the facts. But I can't speak to what actually happened in there, but, you know, it was certainly, if nothing else, it says that they were willing to put a white man to play a Chinese guy doing Kung Fu rather than hire, you know, Kato from the Green Hornet, who was a Chinese guy and a great martial artist, to do the show.
Right. And I know it's a source of controversy with a lot of people, Jonathan, and so I'm going to leave it at that, but I will say this. I was a big fan of Kung Fu and really enjoyed the show. Ed Spielman, by the way, was the person who created the series with Warner Bros. ABC. And I should point out that Jerry Thorpe, the brilliant producer-director of that series, who was really responsible, I think, for that show, Flying, passed away last year. I was a big fan of Jerry's work. He was, I think, one of the great, great people in television, and Kung Fu was his masterpiece.
Yeah. So regardless of what happened with Kung Fu, I think a real disservice was done to Bruce Lee, who developed this whole treatment and never really could get through the door because in 1971, we didn't, you know, this country did not put Chinese leading men on TV. And they whitewashed all those roles. And so I had heard that rumor because anyone who grew up as a Bruce Lee fan and as a martial artist, and I was both, always heard the story how Kung Fu was supposed to be Bruce Lee. And it was just sort of a piece of Bruce Lee lore that I'd heard for many years and that he had pitched this show. So it didn't sound alien to me when Cinemax called me. I imagined, oh, that's the thing he tried to sell, that instead they did Kung Fu. So I was eager to see what it was.
Mm-hmm. So in a way, do you see, and Justin, see Warrior as sort of a about time, a tribute in a way to what Bruce Lee tried to do and his career?
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, the great thing about Bruce Lee is he only got bigger after he passed away. You know, he passed away right before Enter the Dragon, which was the thing that in America catapulted him to great heights. And, you know, he became an icon, and he's never not been an icon. You go into any major city, you're still going to see Bruce Lee posters everywhere. He's become one of the most recognizable faces on the planet. So what's great is for new generations, for the generations who came after that, who see him only as a face on a poster, there's now going to be something that came out of his mind that not only I think is a great piece of entertainment, but is hopefully going to inspire new generations of people to seek out the original Bruce Lee material, his movies, his books, his, you know, his appearances, everything he did.
Mm-hmm. Something else too about this show, which I think people are going to really get into, is the fact that it opens up a whole slice of history that a lot of people don't know about, and that is what took place in the 1800s in San Francisco when you had this period known as the Tong Wars.
Yeah, and that was something I knew nothing about until I read the pages Bruce Lee had written, and then I began doing research. But what happened is, you know, in the early 50s, the Chinese began coming over for the gold rush, and then they began coming over after that to be late, you know, to add labor to build the Transcontinental Railroad. And so by the time you got to the 1870s, you know, you had 25,000 people in Chinatown, 25,000 Chinese people or so living in Chinatown, and the railroad was built, and even though they were still working on the railroad, the numbers weren't required. The railroad was built. The gold rush was over. You had all these Chinese people here, and they became a source of cheap labor for the industrialists. And what that led to was a tremendous amount of resentment and racism against them from the working class Americans till then who were being supplanted. And, you know, so that's the battle we've always had in this country. And, you know, and then beyond that, what happened in Chinatown was these societies rose up that were meant to be benevolent societies to help the immigrants, but gradually evolved into organized crime families. And those families occasionally went to war against each other, and that's what the Tong Wars were.
So bring us up to speed about how Warrior works, about the main character, about what that person goes through, and how the main storyline develops.
Yeah. So, you know, when Warrior opens, we meet Assam, who's a Chinese martial arts prodigy who has come over to America not to work, but to look for his sister, this mysterious sister that is missing. And he arrives in Chinatown, and he immediately gets into a fight, which brings him to the notice of one of the most powerful Tongs in Chinatown who need fighters. So he ends up getting recruited into a Tong. He didn't really have a choice in the matter. And he ends up getting swept into the Tong Wars. And it turns out that maybe the sister he was looking for isn't who he thought she was. And so now he ends up in America, a place he never had any desire to go, but sort of conscripted into this Tong as a hatchet man, which was an enforcer. And he's now kind of compelled to follow that path. And, you know, it's about his search for who he really is. Is he a warrior or is he a gang enforcer? And at the same time, it's about the friendships he forms and his continued search for his sister.
Jonathan Trumper, creator and executive produced one of Cinemax's most popular series, Banshee, which ran on Friday night at 10 o'clock. And he is back with the latest Friday night hour on Cinemax. It's called Warrior. It's inspired by the lives of Bruce Lee. And the first episode is tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. Jonathan joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Applebaum here with you live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. Thank you for joining us and making us part of your 5th of April. And if you have a question or comment, make the call 646-652-2906 or use our chat room. Simon Apple 04 by name, guest 222 is in the room. Monday on Smart Be Televised. Do you ever want to see a channel that is all trailers, all celebrity interviews, that's trailers of film, TV, upcoming shows all the time? Well, it's now available to you on your smart TV set or smart device if you have Zumo TV. It's called the Preview Channel, and a veteran of broadcasting cable television is behind it. His name is William Sager, and he'll be with us live to talk about his new venture, first one in many, many moons. That's William Sager from the Preview Channel, next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And don't forget, later this hour, we've got our new classic trivia question, and if you are first with the correct answer, you can win a DVD of The Simpsons Movie. That's right, The Simpsons Movie, our prize in play later this hour. Jonathan, how long did it take to go from idea inspired by Bruce Lee to making the show happen?
I think I first got together with Justin and Shannon about 4 years ago. And at the time, I was actually just finishing post-production on the fourth season of Banshee. So as soon as I finished that, I wrote the pilot. And so I would say from the meeting, the hard work began probably 4 or 5 months after that meeting. And then it was a good, I think, year and a half. It took about a year and a half till we began casting and got the green light. So I would say the whole process was probably 3.5 to 4 years.
What's been like, by the way, working with Justin? He has not only become a top-notch film director, particularly with the Fast and Furious movies, but ever since he broke out from independent film, he has also become a major player in television. His company, Perfect Storm Entertainment, is doing quite a lot. He had a great hit with SWAT over the last year or so on CBS. He directed the pilot episode. He's done some other shows since, and he's done before and since, and he's now become a power player in TV.
Yeah, I mean, the great thing about Justin is he's first and foremost a filmmaker. And so, you know, making this show required really building a world, a visual world that would feel like our version of San Francisco in the 1800s. And I leaned on him heavily in that process about how to build these sets for camera and how are we going to design the way we shoot our fights and how are we going to meld this whole, all the visuals of this world. And you know, it was great having a collaborator who has so much experience with world building and set building and visual effects and, you know, action shooting. And I just had this great resource at my disposal to really help me build the world.
Mm-hmm. And the lead actor, by the way, is someone I've never heard of. His name is Andrew Koji. How did you find him? What he did before? And what did he bring to the role?
Yeah, so we had a really hard time casting Assam. We went all over the world looking for someone to play Assam, and very often what we got were some very good Bruce Lee imitators, but we had decided from the beginning that we weren't going to try to imitate Bruce Lee in our lead character, because I think that you're basically setting yourself up for failure if you do that. What we wanted to do was infuse the show and the character with some of Bruce Lee's swagger, but we wanted a different character. We wanted an actor who would make the character his own. And so we went through a lot of rounds of auditions and a lot of callbacks, and we still hadn't found the right guy that we were all excited about. And Andrew at the time was living in England, and he was working as an actor in England, you know, doing parts on some of the various BBC shows, and he was doing plays. And none of us knew who he was. And then he just he sent in a tape for us that he made in his kitchen or something, just a tape doing the audition sides. And there was just this kind of seething intensity in him, this real sort of brooding leading man quality to him. So we actually flew him into L.A. to do an in-person audition. And at the time, he also hadn't done martial arts in quite a long time. And he just sort of, you know, he did the audition and we just felt in the room, this guy has something. So we cast him. And from the minute we cast him, he threw himself into training to, like, get himself into fighting shape, because he did have stunt experience. He'd actually, you know, when he wasn't acting, he had worked as a stuntman on one of the Fast and Furious movies. I think it was Fast 6. So we were confident that with the right training, we'd get him to look like a great martial artist. And we just did not expect him to throw himself into the training as hard as he did. And he looks amazing now. And he's also just a really great actor.
It's interesting that in the last couple of years, we have seen a number of Asians out of England who have really made it in the world of television. I think of Gemma Chan, who I met when she was doing Humans, first in England and then on AMC. And we have a number of others who have not only distinguished themselves in television, but have also broken out in film, Gemma being one of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, like, this is no knock on America. It's a much bigger pool. But the training in England, the actors, the way they come up through the system there, they're incredibly well trained. And I think that's probably the reason why so many British actors come here, put on American accents and play roles, and not as many American actors do the opposite. You know, I think there's a level of training and there's a level of winnowing the field in a way. That just makes the quality, you know, easier to spot. And he's just he enters that company now, and I think he's gonna be a really big deal. We'll just try to hold on to him as long as we can.
Mm-hmm. When you have a program like this, and the Asian American community hears about it, obviously one of the things that they are concerned about is how diverse is it in terms of not just who's on camera, but also who's off camera. What efforts were made to try to bring as many Asian Americans aboard as writers, as directors, as people on the working on the set and so forth?
Right. So certainly actors, it goes without saying, we wanted all the Asian roles to be played by Asian actors. We also wanted to have, and we succeeded in having, a handful of Asian directors, Asian American directors, and then beyond that, we had, and we needed Chinese American writers in the writers' room who could speak authentically to that experience. So across the board, we did that. What's interesting is that Shannon and Justin, who are sort of, you know, the two executive producers with me, and Shannon, who's representing the Bruce Lee point of view, is more interested in diversity generally than Asian diversity. She wants Asian representation for sure. She also just wants to make sure there's diversity, period. And so that's, you know, she just made it clear to us we shouldn't just focus on Asian, but we should focus on diversity in general, which is something that we continue to stay very conscious of. But yeah, it was always an imperative from the beginning to make sure that there were some Asian directors, Asian writers, and, you know, performers.
Warrior is the newest of Cinemax's original Friday night dramas at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, inspired by the writings of Bruce Lee, a very interesting historical as well as crime and action drama. And we've got the creator executive producer with us, Jonathan Tropper, who is also known for writing another one of the popular Cinemax shows, Banshee, which had a very good run on that service, and was with us on this program when that program was running. Jonathan joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour. On Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Appleman with you live from the other coast, New York, 41 degrees. It's on and off right at the top of the hour. It's supposed to be a beautiful weekend here in the Big Apple. 60, nearly 70-degree weather, and that's going to continue into the following week. If you have a question or comment for Jonathan in our remaining minutes with him, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. A week from today on the program, we'll have, among others, the executive producer of a new Travel Channel series called Portals to Hell. It's not your normal paranormal series, and we will have Ann Geddes. She is the executive producer of the series with us live. That's next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And the following Monday, we will have the creator executive producer of one of the newest shows coming up on the CW. It's graduating from their digital service, CW Seed. It's a very unusual one called I Ship It. Yuen Kang will join us. She's the creator executive producer of I Ship It, coming soon to the CW, and with us live a week from Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, April 15th. Tax Day, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. for you and Justin and Joanna, what was the most important thing about how this was filmed and how it turned out?
I think when we started out, one of the things we wanted to do was we really wanted to capture the spirit of Bruce Lee, which doesn't mean copying him, like I said before. But what Bruce Lee did, in my opinion, was he took, you know, the Kung Fu movies and the genre that was primarily viewed as a very specific Eastern genre, and he infused it with a strong Western ethos. It was almost like, you know, the Kung Fu hero as a cowboy. He had swagger. He had charm. He had a certain style, and that opened it up to everybody. And we wanted to capture that kind of Western ethos, that cowboy vibe, you know, in our episodes. So it was really important that we somehow built the language of the show and the tone of the show to capture that. At the same time, you know, he was trying to break down doors, and we wanted to make sure this was a show that broke down doors. So we wanted to really represent the Chinese in America no differently than we would represent any other immigrant group in America, and not treat them as the other. And the way we've designed the show, you're so in the heads of the Chinatown residents that you immediately, you know, understand, like you immediately relate to them, and you kind of forget that they're a different nationality. So it's just really important to break down that barrier as well.
Aside from encouraging not just Asian American and Asian diversity, but diversity overall, what other guidance did Shannon Lee give you about putting this series together?
Well, Shannon is great because, first of all, we were concerned, you know, I was concerned when I first got involved, oh, you know, she's somebody who's been protecting her father's, you know, legacy for so long. Everything I write, she's going to say, no, that doesn't work. You know, my father wouldn't want that. But, you know, she had a much more generous approach to it, which was, you know, she has an overall understanding of what was, you know, integral to her father's vision. But beyond that, she really left me free to create and left us free to build a show that, you know, he wouldn't have quite imagined, because TV is very different today than it was back when he was imagining this. So, you know, we go darker and we're not procedural, and it's less about learning lessons, and it's much more of a sort of a contemporary tale, and she had no problem embracing that at all.
Mm-hmm. If you go to a second season, how do you and Justin and Shannon want to expand the story?
I'm not officially announced yet, but I'm absolutely planning to go to a second season. I mean, this is a world that just keeps opening up, and, you know, the world already in the first 10 episodes gets way beyond Assam's experience. You really come to understand the characters living in all the words. You understand sort of the politics of the Irish laborers who are being supplanted by the Chinese laborers. You understand the industrialists who are looking for the cheap, Chinese labor. You understand the politicians, the policemen. And then within Chinatown, you understand the gangsters, but you also understand the businessmen and, you know, the brothel owners and everybody involved. So we've created a world with so many characters that, you know, I don't think it's hard to envision a season two where the story just keeps unfolding with new characters and new situations as they're all sort of succumbing to the internal pressure of the Tang Wars and the external pressure of the xenophobia and the systemic racism in the political machine.
Mm-hmm. One thing about this series is, in a way, it's a return for Cinemax to what they did several years ago with The Nick, which was produced here in New York. Loved the show. Andre Helm,
right,
by the way, who was one of the co-stars. It was his breakout role. I'm happy to say he's now involved in a new series, and I think his career is really skyrocketing as a result of that program. And again, it seems that your series and The Nick have a connection of really giving us a world of American history that very few people really got the chance to know before those series happened.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's coincidental that both of them happen to be periods and you know, pieces of history that haven't been explored before on television. At the same time, I was a big fan of The Nick, and I think, you know, if I had been asked to do this and I hadn't seen The Nick, I might have had my doubts that we could make something period feel as contemporary, as compelling. But because I had seen The Nick, I was definitely encouraged in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Final thought. Does everybody feel, you know, that we've done Bruce Lee justice, at particularly a time when, in a way, some of his work is being rediscovered? I don't know if you know it, but YouTube has now been getting the classic episodes of The Green Hornet, which was his breakout role in television and in entertainment. And you see those shows, and it's like, there is no question that Lee just had, right from the get-go, a charisma, a style, and he was a force. He was like a force that you could not hold, and it just was captured so beautifully on the screen.
Yeah, I mean, I think, to me, the ultimate barometer is how the family feels, and I know the family is incredibly happy with the show. But, you know, in general, it's a show that's being made by people who don't have to be asked to sort of preserve his legacy, because we're all fans, and we all feel exactly what you just said. Like, there's a reason why Bruce Lee was the guy who, you know, in a country that wasn't interested in watching Asian leads, suddenly people were watching Enter the Dragon. Like, this is a guy who, he sort of transcended race and he transcended, you know, nationality. He just had this charisma and this sense of humor and this spark and this, you know, grace and this athletic ability and this fighting style. And, you know, it's undeniable when you watch him. Like, even though those movies don't have a production value that measures up to what we do today, you can still see the person in there sort of defying all of that and just coming right at you.
And by the way, one other thing too about Bruce Lee, if you can, see the Green Hornet episodes on YouTube. They're really incredible. And you wonder why ABC made the mistake, I think, of canceling that show after one season. It was really a terrific show and very, very well produced and a great showcase for Lee. Anyway, Warrior starts tonight. And oh, one other thing, too. The reviews already have been coming in and been coming in great. Hollywood Reporter gave it a great review. Other people have, too. And I have to say, Jonathan, it looks from the reviews like you've got a winner on your hands.
I hope so. You know, you know, it's such a big TV market now. There's so many shows. I think there were, in 2018 alone, there were 495 scripted shows. So, you know, the idea is, what can you do to cut through the clutter? And, you know, we're on Cinemax, which requires its own subscription. So that's our challenge and that's our cross to bear. But I think we have made something really special. And I think the audience will find it. I think there's an audience for this and they're not being serviced. And I think they'll find it.
And they can find it starting tonight at 10 p.m. East Pacific time, the Friday night 10 o'clock hour on Cinemax. Keeps on going original, and it continues with Warrior, inspired by the work of Bruce Lee. Again, 10 o'clock tonight and every Friday night from here on in on Cinemax. Check your local news where that network is available in your area on cable and satellite. And for more details about the program online, go to www.cinemax.com. That's www.cinemax.com. Jonathan Chopper, great executive producer of both Warrior and before that, another great hit for Cinemax Banshee. Thank you again for coming back on the program today. Congratulations to you and Justin and everyone involved with the series. And hopefully tonight begins a great and long and wonderful run.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome, Jonathan. Anytime. Take care. Have a super weekend.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Jonathan Chopper, creative executive producer of Warrior, tonight, 10 o'clock Eastern Pacific on Cinemax. Joining us live from Los Angeles. More tomorrow will be televised coming away. But first, some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. If you want a very unusual take on the world of medicine, try this. It's called The Sawbones Book by the podcasters Justin and Sydney McElroy. And you can get that book in audio form right now as part of your trial subscription to Audible.com. You know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital entertainment and information inspiration as well. Over 100,000 titles to choose from. You listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or Radio. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. You get 3 free audiobooks, 2 of them from the growing catalog of Audible Originals, and a 1-month trial. And get this, if you want to skip the trial and do an annual subscription, this is the last day you can save $50 off the price. That's right. You got until the end of the day today to save $50 off the price of your annual subscription if you go right for it. Get all the details at audibletrial.com/televised. And hear for yourself how audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. Coming up in our next half hour, we've got our classic trivia question of the week. The Simpsons movie on DVD is our prize. But first, from Urban Movie Channel, we will have the folks behind their latest dramatic hit, just got nominated for 3 Emmy Awards, Funk, S.I.U. Dan Garcia and Michael Mayhall join us live from Orlando, Florida, and Route to Orlando, Florida. We'll explain that as we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradioandspreaker.com. Together, or there are 35 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Beach Hard Springer home for Kel's Corner. I'm sure I have a lot to say about the Final Four of both the NCAA Men and Women's Tournament and a whole lot more. Kel's Corner, today, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And don't forget, Best BTR and Spreaker coming your way 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to more of our 90-minute Swampy Televised happening on this 5th of April, 2019. Simon Applebaum hitting with you live from New York. Delighted to have you aboard, whether you're catching us on Blog Talk Radio Spreaker or the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. And if you have a question or comment for upcoming guests, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com, SimonApple404 by name, and guest 222 is in the room. The more you look at Urban Movie Channel, the more you might conclude, wait a minute, it's not just movies. It's a lot of original stuff. That's right. In fact, it is getting more and more of a rep for its original series. The Rich and the Ruthless, which was produced by the wonderful former co-star of The Young and the Restless, Victoria Rowell, who was on this program a couple years ago when that series started. Well, it's done very well for itself, multiple seasons so far. And now another series is in its second season on that service, which is available on smart TV sets and devices. It's called Bronx SIU, produced right here in the Big Apple. And you might want to know that a few weeks ago, it was nominated for 3 Daytime Emmy Awards. Joining us live from Orlando, Florida, is the co-creator of this series, Dan Garcia. Dan, welcome in.
Hey, how are you?
Fine, thank you. And joining Dan and myself, the other co-creator of the series, he is en route from New Orleans to Orlando to meet with Dan as we speak. We welcome in Michael Mayhall. Hello, Michael.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Dan, we'll start with you. What do you make of the success of Bronx SIU and getting the 3 Daytime Emmys a few weeks ago?
Well, you know, it's pretty exciting. Everyone, you know, set out to create something original, something fresh, a new take on what most people thought would be a common police procedural type show. And we just gave it a little bit more character, a little bit more heart, and went a little bit deeper into the lives of the actual police officers, detectives, and the struggles that they went through on a daily basis. So we just kind of did a deeper dive. So, you know, it resonated with the audience. And so, you know, we're really happy about that.
Michael, how did you and Dan come together to make this?
You know, it's Dan and I have been working together off and on for various projects for many, many years. And really, it was just out of the blue. He called me and he said he's working on a script. He's got something going, and he wanted me to jump on board with him. And I said yes. And it was a great phone call. It's been a great ride.
Mm-hmm. Dan, what inspired this series? When I first heard about this, 2 words came to mind: Naked City.
Well, to be honest with you, it came about from just pretty much one experience. I grew up in the Bronx, New York, and one time as a kid, I was walking down the street looking for my older brother. And back then, there was the Stop and Frisk thing going on in New York City, and you know, you had a lot of detectives that would like pick up people and you know, frisk them or put them on the wall and things like that. And so anyway, I ended up getting picked up by 2 detectives, and I was about probably maybe 9 years old at the time. And they drove me around looking for someone, asking me if I had any information, because there was a situation where there was a local prostitute who had been murdered. And so they were trying to figure out what happened. And it was an experience that sort of was etched in my brain as a young kid. And so, you know, later on, I came back to my mind and I started writing the script. And I thought about, you know, growing up in the Bronx and those detectives and trying to capture what they were going through and the authenticity of it. And so it sort of was fate in a way that happened to me and kind of gave birth to the show.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And Mike, go ahead, Michael.
No, I was just saying, I didn't know that. I didn't know that little story there. Wow, that's something else.
Yeah, pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Dan, how did it influence the way you wrote the script? How did that incident influence the way you wrote the script, fashion the characters, and the point of view that you wanted to portray in this series?
Well, I can't take all the credit for the entire script because Mike worked with me on it a lot. And it's funny because we have a weird dynamic because we fight with each other about different plot points and, you know, different twists. And he changes this and I don't like it and I change this and he doesn't like it. But it, we end up balancing each other out. So we both, you know, worked on it together. I had, you know, created the characters and wrote the first draft. But after that, it's pretty much a mix of both of our ideas. But my main thing I wanted to do was, you know, I wanted to create real people, and I wanted the audience to see the real life of one of these detectives. And I didn't want it to be so, you know, one-dimensional where, you know, the good guy gets the bad guy. Because, you know, people by nature are far more complex than that. And so we wanted to make sure that we dove deep into the realities of the everyday lives of these people. And so, you know, we wanted people to relate to them. And so that was pretty much, you know, the foundation of what we did.
Yeah, I would say it's almost like it's a character piece first and a cop drama second. And I mean, that's just my take, you know, on it.
Mm-hmm. That's why I raised Naked City, because people who remember that series know that it was a program that, like this one, was filmed in New York, but also, while it dealt with cases from the New York City Police Department, the spotlight was always on the characters that either committed the crime or were impacted by the crime that made that show work. It was a more of a semi-anthology approach to the program. Dan, from when you and Michael created the idea, how did it get to Urban Movie Channel? Were they the first ones to take a look at it and say, yes, we want this, or did this have to go through a bunch of networks and a bunch of no's before it got to their yes?
Well, the beauty of it is it never made it past Urban Movie Channel. I pitched it to them first, and they loved it, and they jumped on it. So I never got a chance to pitch it anywhere else. And so I'm so glad because they've been a great partner. Bob Johnson and the whole team over there, they've been awesome. So, you know, we're so glad that we got a chance to have them as partners, and they've really helped us mold the show into something special.
And Michael, once you got the yes, how long did it take to get revved up, get your crew, get your cast, and start shooting in the streets of the Bronx?
Yeah, you know, Dan, it really feels like it all just sort of fell into place almost immediately. You know, Dan was he was the main driving force behind creating the show, and so the scripts were probably 85% there by the time I got on board. What would you say, Dan? Some of the main cast was already in place, and we just hit the ground running, if memory serves, from that first season, and just happened to stop since. You know, we're just still cranking away.
Yeah, absolutely, we have worked with most of the actors before on previous projects, so I kind of already had an idea of who I wanted for each role, and you know, it just worked out so great with Shanti Lowry playing Yolanda. You know, obviously she's been nominated for an Emmy for a performance. Same with Brian White. And, you know, Mia Baraka, a dear friend of mine, also from New Orleans. I'm so happy for him with his nomination. You know, these are people we just kind of just called and said, hey, man, you want to be in the show? And it kind of worked out. So it's just amazing how things come together.
Bronx FIU is now in its second season on the Urban Movie Channel. It's available on smart TV sets and smart devices. AMC Networks is the owner, by the way, and the service was created by Bob Johnson, the former founder and first president of Black Entertainment Television, BET. And you can catch a new episode of the second season of this series every week later in the month, and then both season one and two will be available to binge as much as you like. From there and beyond. We've got the two creators of the series with us, Dan Garcia and Michael Madoff, and they're both with us live from Orlando, Florida, in the case of Michael, en route to Orlando, Florida, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Starting to have fun with you live from New York, and we're happy to have you with us on this 5th of April 2019. 41 degrees at the top of the hour, rain on and off today, but then this weekend, beautiful skies, near 70 degrees both Saturday and Sunday, and it continues into the week. If you have a question or comment for our guests, Dan and Michael, don't be afraid. Make the thing happen. 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up for the next half hour, we're going to get musical with two of the top composers in all of television. Somebody we've had on before, the Emmy Award winner from Fargo, Jeff Russo, and the man that makes NBC's award-winning drama, This Is Us, Musically Happen. We will have Siddhartha Kuzukosla will join us. We'll talk about the music he makes for the show and his original songs as well. Jeff and Siddhartha join us in our next half hour exclusively here on Tomorrow Talk. So stay where you are. It's going to be a lot of fun. Dan, for you and Michael, what was it like to film on the streets of the Bronx?
Oh man, it was just awesome. It was great. You know, we are definitely, I would, Dan, would you say, be fair that, you know, we really are, although we're on the internet, some people every now and again call us a web series, but we really are a television show. You know, we film like a television show. Our shots are set up in that way. But filming on the streets, it's amazing because you get the city of New York like another character. It's the unspoken character, just as important as every other member in our cast.
Mm. Absolutely,
and
everybody's with camera is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Michael, talk more about the plot of the show. Talk about the main characters and what they deal with in episode after episode.
Oh man, I think at its heart, it's about these. You very unique detectives. Each one brings their own level of expertise, and they solve some really bizarre cases that we set up in the world that the other precincts don't necessarily want to put a hand on. So the SIU. Geez, Dan. I mean, I'm trying to think of all the bizarre cases that we've had.
Nun was killed. You know, a prostitute was beheaded. The mayor's son was kidnapped. I mean, all the most heinous cases and crimes that the normal precincts don't really want to touch. That's what the special investigation team is for.
And what we've managed to do is not only do we have we've got these ongoing sort of murder of the week things that are happening, but we also have the big larger scope going on top of everything. You know, they have enemies that they've made with various mob organizations. There's hints of corruption within the department, so they're constantly fighting all these other elements that you know take place throughout the whole season. So you can tune in and catch like a murder and see how the SIU solved it. And if you follow the whole season, you'll see you know how each case leads and can build to something bigger within the characters, within each character's life.
SIU stands for Special Investigative Unit, correct? Like SVU with Special Victims.
Yeah, Special Investigations Unit, yep.
Mm-hmm. Do you, in your writing, adopt sort of the rip from the headlines approach that's worked so well for Dick Wolf on his series?
Not so much, because we want the show to be a little bit more timeless. But I'm sure, you know, things that we've written about have happened, you know, in the past. But we try to keep the show as timeless as possible.
For both of you, what kind of reaction or what kind of cooperation are you getting from the police in the Bronx?
Well, you know, we work with the mayor's office of film and television. You know, on the production, and we always get the blessing of the New York Police Department. We have them on set 90% of the time while we're filming. So, you know, it's really great to have them around. You know, the New York Film Commission in New York City is really, really supportive of the project.
And I think also the few officers that I've met when I'm out there actually filming on the street, who aren't necessarily attached to the project, who just happen to be in the area, are always very intrigued, and they're actually really supportive, and you know they're going to tune in and watch. So that makes me feel like we're doing something right.
Exactly.
Have they given any feedback, whether face to face, social media, emails, phone calls, to the reaction to the episodes? They feel like the portrayals are spot on, or that you've at least, if it's multi-sided, that you've given them their due.
I don't know anyone personally, police officers in New York, but I've got friends who are not in New York who are police officers, and they feel that we're representing what they do well, like we're showing both sides of the coin. And what I was really most proud of, I know it's a little off subject, but our main character, one of our main characters, Jimmy Blue, played by Brian White, he suffers from post-traumatic stress syndrome left over from the Afghan-Iraq war. And a friend of mine who has served in the military, who's been going through his own thing, says that we really captured that really well, and he felt that we did a service to the vets of America to bring that to life. So I also thought we did a good job on that. So we must be doing something right. So.
Absolutely. And my cousin served in Afghanistan, and he also said that that we captured those emotions very well.
Did both of you write all the scripts and do all the directing, or did you, in terms of hiring, obviously diversity is, like, you know, top of mind. It's certainly in the cast. What about the crew?
As far as the writing directing, I would say that first season, Dan wrote did a first pass, and then those scripts really became a mix of both of us. And then Dan was producing. He had the producer hat on, and I had the director hat on for the episode. And when we get downtime, we would collaborate. But would you just be fair, Dan?
Yeah. It's really a really great fusion of the both of us. And like I said, it's really cool because we balance each other out, because we tend to be on different sides of the spectrum on a lot of different decisions, and we end up having to compromise. Like, you know, some people wish Congress could do, that's what we do, compromise.
Yeah, it's always for the best. It's always, we always get a stronger scene and a stronger character decision and a stronger cut as we work from other ends of the spectrum to the middle.
Exactly.
For people who haven't seen the show, is it done in a very gritty style? Is it done semi-documentary, the way The Naked City was, and other shows also have taken since? What would you say is sort of like the style of presentation, the style in which the story unfolds?
I would go gritty, at times the story can grab a hold of you and not let go. But we have to try to balance that.
Yeah, I think we aimed for a gritty feel, but at the same time, polished. So it's almost like it's authentic, and it feels a little different than a network TV show, but then it feels a lot similar as well. So we try to create something unique, and that's a good thing about working with a network like UMC. We get to experiment and, you know, try to innovate. So it ends up working out.
I've never asked this in the 11 and a half years we've done this program. So here it goes. With so many series now producing all over New York City, do you ever run into camera crews from other scripted shows?
I don't think we ever run into a camera crews, but we have been on set, and I've seen them like a couple blocks over. And we've been filming other – it's coming to our
– Danny Garcia and Michael Mayhoff are the creators, and they also do other things too, like write and direct. A show called Bronx SIU. It's now in its second season on the Urban Movie Channel, which is distributed by ANC Networks, and it's available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Just up for 3 Daytime Emmy Awards. The Emmy Awards will be coming out later this spring from Los Angeles. And both Dan and Michael are with us live from Orlando, Florida, or en route to Orlando in the case of Michael, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon App, I'm with you live from New York. Delighted to have you aboard. And if you have a question or comment for both of them in our remaining minutes, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we have a new network in town. It's all trailers of movies, upcoming TV shows, celebrity interviews, a whole lot of shorts. It's called the Preview Channel. And the founder, who has been involved in the TV industry for a very long time, he's with us, William Sager. We're going to get his thoughts also where he sees TV going. That's all coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And if you came in late on today's program, or you're a newcomer to the show and you want to catch up on episodes you missed, why don't you go to our homepage anytime you like. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. You can also check us out on podcasts on iTunes, Apple TV, Twitter's podcast app, and, of course, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. If you go to iHeartRadio.com, put Tomorrow We Televise in the search bar, click, and you are right there. Dan, you have some nice bit of news that you got a few weeks ago, and that is that the Urban Movie Channel has decided to do a second show with you called The House Divided. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, House Divided is a drama, a family drama, and it deals with the descendants of a woman named Letty Sanders, who was actually a slave in the 1800s. She, her owners brought her to Los Angeles by mistake, which she ended up becoming a free woman. And so she started several businesses and ended up being one of the wealthiest women in all of Los Angeles. And she had a great family, and her descendants are the basis of the story. And so there's a lot of infighting going on, you know, trying to hold on to the family fortune. There's some investigations going on. There's a lot of love triangles and juicy stuff. And so the series just finished production, so we're really excited about it.
And that was shot where? I believe in Los Angeles?
Yeah, we shot majority in Malibu, California. Yep, Los Angeles area.
And you got a pretty interesting cast. A wonderful actress named Paula Jai Parker. Some people may know her from True Blood or Ray Donovan. On Showtime, she's in it. A number of other interesting people are in it. What was it like to work with this particular cast?
Oh, it was great. We had Lawrence Hilton Jacobs, of course. He's a vet. Amazing. Demetria McKinney was absolutely fantastic. Of course, Paula Jai Parker.
Yeah.
You know, ever since Hustle and Flow, you know, I really, really, really wanted to work with her. So, you know, we have a great cast, and the chemistry was there from the beginning. And the performances are absolutely amazing.
And I might add, too, that this series is going to be running. Do we have a premiere date? I understand it's going to be running on UMC this summer.
Yeah, this summer. We don't have an exact date yet, but we believe sometime in June. So we're in post-production right now. So, you know, we're super excited.
Michael, do you have a project of your own in the fire with UMC or anybody else?
No, you know, I'm helping Dan a little bit with the post on House Divided, and Dan was kind enough to bring me out to do a little bit of when they get a second season, I'm going to see if I can elbow my way in there a little bit to get behind the camera some.
Come on.
Yeah. No, you know, my goal right now is to focus, and no word has come down yet about season 3 for Bronx, but I'm just starting to pin some ideas, so that way I'm going to keep my fingers crossed that if we get season 3, I'm going to be ahead of the game and have the scripts ready, so we can just get on it. That's what I have going on right now.
Yeah, and given the fact that a lot of people are discovering SIU because of the Emmy Award nominations, it looks like that at least is in the cards. And if it is, Dan, is there an issue that you and Michael haven't covered in the first 2 seasons that you would like to get to in the 3rd?
Oh, I mean, there's probably hundreds of them. You know, you know, we're kicking around some ideas right now, and we want to deal with some pretty heavy stuff season 3.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm saying that's on you. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Michael.
I'm saying we just can't give it away. You know, you got to.
Mm-hmm. And you can do so anytime you like. It's on Urban Movie Channel, available 24/7 on smart TV sets and smart TV devices all over the place. The program is Bronx SIU, now in season 2. New episode unspooling every week. And again, it is up for 3 daytime Emmy Awards. Those Emmy Awards will be announced later this spring. Remember, if you'd like to get Urban Movie Channel in your area, find out more about it, here's where you go online, www.umc.tv. That's www.umc.tv. And again, Urban Movie Channel, owned by AMC Networks, is available on most smart TV sets and most smart TV devices. And in addition, coming up this summer, another new series from Dan and crew called The House Divided. Different series from Los Angeles. And again, that will be starting later this summer. Dan Garcia, Michael Mayoff, thank you both very much for coming on. Congratulations on second season of Bronx SIU. In New York State stands, the new House Divided series. Both of you, the Daytime Emmy nominations. Good luck with them becoming awards later this spring. And hopefully the second season continues the success for both of you and much, much more to come.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Pleasure to have you both on. Take care. Have a super weekend.
You too. God bless.
You too. Take care.
You got it. Dan Garcia and Michael Mayhoff from Bronx SIU joining us live from Orlando, Florida, in the case of Dan, and in the case of Michael, and Ruth from New Orleans to Orlando. And all the very best on a safe trip to Michael on his way to catch up with Dan. Both of us joining live this half hour on Tomorrow We Tell Live. Now it's time for our Crackatory Question of the Week. We are going for our third weekly winner in a row. And if you're first with the correct answer, you can win a DVD of The Simpsons Movie. That's right. That's the prize in play. And here is the question. What group made the theme from SWAT a number one hit in the 1970s? What group made the theme from SWAT, S-W-A-T? Remember that series in the early 1970s? That tactical crew. It ran only a year and a half, but it was very popular. It was on ABC. And Barry DeBoerzon composed the theme that became a winner for this group. What group made the theme from SWAT a number one hit? Turned out to be, for this group, a one-hit wonder. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. And if you are first with the correct answer, you'll not only win the Simpsons movie DVD, but you'll also be our third weekly winner in a row. And if you just missed the question a moment ago, don't worry. We will try to get to it one more time before we wrap things up over the next half hour. And if not, we'll post it first thing tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in. So do so. By the way, if you've already won, let somebody else win. Give them the opportunity to win, too. We thank you for that. Remember, it's simonapple04@yahoo.com. And if we, again, don't get to the question again later today, find it tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to play in, get in the game. And all the very best. This is Tomorrow We Televised. We're the promo about the tube, now in our 12th year on the air. And next month, we will mark 10 years on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. We come to you Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, often 60 minutes, sometimes 90 minutes or more. And we invite you to be part of the program. So when we have a guest on, or if you want to sound off on where things are at in the world of television, current and future, give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. If you're not in the phone, use the chat room. SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Guest 222 already in the room. So be part of the program. We want to make it as interactive as possible, and we do really appreciate you being aboard. By the way, coming up 1 week from today on our program, one of our guests will be Anna Geddes. She is the executive producer of a new series on Travel Channel coming later this month called Portals to Hell, a very unusual travel and paranormal series. And then, the following Wednesday, one of our guests will be the creator executive producer of the new comedy series coming to the CW. It already is playing on CW Seed. The second season will play on the CW very soon. It's called I Ship It. And Yulin Klang will be our special guest. She is the creator and executive producer. And again, that's coming up April 15th, Eyes of April, right here, 1 week from Monday, on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. When we come back, there's two events coming up next week that you should put on your radar screen. One of them has a mystery attached. But first, two of the best composers in television will join us. The Emmy winner from Fargo, Jeff Russo, and the Tomb Master from NBC's hit series, This Is Us, Siddhartha Kosca. They will join us live from Los Angeles after we pause near the top of the hour for web identification. You are connected with www.blogtalkradio.com and www.spreaker.com. With together, they reach over 35 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker are your home for AJ and DJ Reese Hybrid Show. It's a radio show that gives you music, gives you talk, and a whole lot more, old school style. That's AJ and DJ Reese Hybrid Radio. Today, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. That's a half hour after you go off the air, right here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And don't forget, that feature on Spreaker available 24/7. Just go to YouTube.com and enjoy. Welcome back to the Bobby Televised, and welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour on this 5th of April, 2019. Simon Applebaum here with you. Happy you're aboard. We have some wonderful guests, musical guests coming your way in the next half hour, and we invite you, as always, to be part of the program. Make it interactive. Join us at 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The numbers get anywhere. You are catching us across the country or around the globe right here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And if you want to get involved in our chat room, please do so. Just go to blogtalkradio.com/televised, look for the chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name, and get aboard. Guest 222 is already there. If you're a regular fan of this show, you know that from time to time, we like to bring you the people who make the music happen on your favorite television shows. And I'm happy to say we got two of the very, very best coming away this half hour. First, we have somebody who's been on this program before. He is one of the most unique composers around. He is an Emmy Award winner for his work on Fargo, which he is still involved with on FX. And he is also the musical person behind one of the top new series of this year, just got renewed for a second season on Netflix earlier this week, The Umbrella Academy. It is a pleasure to welcome back to this program in an Internet Radio exclusive, Jeff Russo. Jeff, welcome back in. It's a pleasure to have you back.
Oh, thanks, man. I'm glad I could get in here in time.
It is a pleasure. And joining both of us is someone from a series I have wanted to have on this program for a long time. The Emmy Award-winning NBC series, This Is Us. This is the person who writes the music. Joining us live, Siddhartha Koshka. Siddhartha, thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Jeff, we'll start with you. First of all, your reaction to your work on The Umbrella Academy and Netflix giving you a second season.
You know, it's one of the fun ones to do. It's a pretty interesting take on the, you know, on the superhero model, with it being really weird and people having problems. And I have a good time doing it. So I'm really excited that we got a second season.
And when people know you from Fargo, which has this very mysterious music, we talked about this with you on the show before, where you try to balance out the different types of music, where sometimes it's very percussive, sometimes it's very dramatic, sometimes it's very piano-y, very intimate. I would think that the nice thing about doing The Umbrella Academy was you could not only do something far different from Fargo, but you could also do sort of your own thoughts about how to do a superhero series.
I don't like to do what is expected. So trying to have a different take on something like as iconic as anything superhero, I'd like to try to, you know, give it something different. And I think I kind of try to apply that to most of the things I do. You know, I'm not really interested in doing the same old thing, although sometimes the same old thing works very well, which is why I guess it's the same old thing. I like to try to mix it up, you know?
Mm-hmm. So I thought 3 years into This Is Us, what do you think about why this series has had the impact it's had on people watching and on television overall?
Well, first of all, hey, Jeff. good to hear your voice. Jeff and I are good buddies. I'm a good big fan of his as well. I think This Is Us has connected with people because audiences, you know, I think as someone who's watching that show, you find a bit of yourself in that show. In either one of the characters or one of the storylines. The show is, you know, steeped in reality, it's steeped in humanity, it's steeped in experiences we've all endured on some level. So I think you see a bit of yourself in the show. And I think that's, you know, one of the big reasons why the show resonates.
Mm-hmm. When Dan Fogelman, the creator of This Is Us, gave you the assignment, did he give you any guidance, any background about how to do this series, especially given the fact that one of the key things about this show is it jumps back and forth in time.
Yeah, when Dan gave me the pilot script originally, you know, he gave me the script and he said, "Can you go and write a piece of music that you hear, just off of the script?" And so I read the script, and what came to me was, you know, was something incredibly eloquent, beautiful, simple, understated, and honest. And to me, that meant that the approach musically to the show had to be that. It had to be organic. It had to feel like I was using instrumentation that was timeless. And so I detuned a bunch of my acoustic guitars and came up with like my own little tuning, and wrote this 6-minute piece of music. And I gave it to Dan and he loved it, and it ultimately got me the gig. And the other thing I did know in the back of my mind was that they were going to use a Sufjan Stevens song in the pilot. And, you know, those score and song don't necessarily need to be related, you know, in terms of the songs that are being used in an episode versus the score. I do think that there is some sort of, there is a thread that I like to achieve. And with my music, with the music supervisors that work on these shows with me, we like to have something cohesive. And so then I thought about that and I said, okay, well what is it about Sufjan Stevens' music that's drawing Dan and it was that very thing. It was organic. It was acoustic. It was timeless. And I'm talking specifically about the more acoustic stuff of Sufjan Stevens. So I applied that, and I felt like that was also the way to tie the different eras in together.
Mm-hmm. Siddhartha, take us through the creative process to make organic and honest music, not just for one episode, but episode after episode, some of which have songs that you've composed. What goes through your process to figure this music hits the spot, this music fits the character, this music invites the audience in an organic way to feel something? You know, so a lot of people think that this is the show that is okay to cry, and cry a lot. But if you don't cry in an episode, you're like way off the earth.
Right. For me, the simplest way I can describe it is, I almost imagine that I am an invisible character in the Pearson living room, who's just observing what's going on, and I've got an acoustic guitar in my hand, and I'm just kind of playing along, and that's how I begin the process. It's me on my guitar, and I'm literally just doing that. And in that process, I come up with a theme, and there's a musical, there's a melodic hook that I come up with, almost like your chorus melody, if you will. And a theme of that particular episode, I'm working on it. And for me, that is the most honest way I can approach it. You know, it's, I feel like I'm just there with them. I pretend I'm there with them. And that ultimately gives me the theme. And I think what keeps it honest for me is, making sure that the performances on the show, meaning the acting performances and the writing, are so strong and they're so bold and beautiful. That I also want to make sure that I handle their emotionality in the right way. I don't want to push too hard for fear of, you know, the show getting if I push too hard, then the music becomes schmaltzy. And if I lay back a little bit and I let the performances do the work, I play a more supportive role. And for me, the measure is, I don't turn in a musical cue back to producers, or to Dan at least, or to the editors, unless I, especially in emotional scenes, unless I feel like a tingle in my spine. That's the only way I can describe it. And I do it every time. I will perform something over and over again until I get that moment. That's really it.
We've got two of the best people in the world of TV music with us this half hour on Tomorrow We Televised. It's going to have Emmy Award winner Jeff Russo from Fargo and the just-renewed Netflix series The Umbrella Academy. And the person who makes This Is Us on NBC News Reply on Tuesday night, Sadafa Kosta. They're both live with us from Los Angeles, Internet Radio exclusive this half hour on Tomorrow We Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Happy that you're spending your 5th of April with us, 2019. If you have a question or comment for our guests, don't be shy. Make music on your own. Bring it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up later this half hour, I'll have some thoughts about two events in television you should put on your radar screen. In the case of one of them, there's a mystery that we hope gets solved while that event is happening. That's coming up after our interview later this half hour. So, Arthur, I understand you have some other musical assignments you're doing.
Yeah, I'm. I do the music for Marvel's Runaways on Hulu, and that's a superhero series. Very, very different palette than This Is Us. Probably the exact opposite of organic instrumentation. I'm using analog synths on that show. I also do The Kids Are All Right on ABC, and I'm as we called. I was just working on a new series for Hulu called Looking for Alaska.
Which, by the way, is getting cast. I understand that earlier today they announced a new casting for it. Do you pick the assignments, or are you approached by a Hulu, let's say, to say, do Marvel's Runaways, and then you do Runaways and say, okay, we love what you're doing here. Now try this show we've got coming up.
Well, the way that it normally works is it varies. You know, I have relationships as Jeff does as well, and, you know, one of the ways composers continue to get work in this business is, you know, you work with the creator of a show, and that creator of the show, you know, she or he goes on to make something else. And if you have a strong enough relationship with them and the trust is there, you tend to kind of work with them on multiple projects, you know, and that's the case. You know, Looking for Alaska, for example, that show was created by Stephanie Savage and Josh Schwartz and Stephanie Savage, and Steph and Josh also created Marvel's Runaways, and so I worked with them there, and then they hired me on this one. So sometimes it comes from, you know, the relationships. Other times you'll get a call from the studio. My agent will get a call and say, hey, would Sid be interested in doing this? And I'll read the script and then decide whether it's the right thing to do or not.
Mm-hmm. And in your case, Jeff, how did you get the gig for The Umbrella Academy, which has turned out to be a very popular new series with a great cast like Mary J. Blige?
Well, you know, in very much the same way that Sid was just explaining, I worked with Steve Blackman. He was one of the writers and a producer on Fargo, and then he worked on Legion. We did something called Altered Carbon together last year. And then he called me and said, hey, I'm doing this thing. Do you want to come along for the ride? And I said, yeah, send me the script. So I read the script and it was really great. And off we went. You know, that's kind of the important part of what we accomplish artistically is the idea and the hope is to find creative partners who, you know, you create this storytelling art with, and it's a very symbiotic relationship. You know, that's, I think, the idea of sort of keeping and moving forward and continuing to work with some of the same people again and again, is that you tend to learn people's style, and you tend to and they tend to learn yours, and then they sort of creates a sort of grander style, you know, like a bigger, it's bigger than itself, I think. Is that that might be a good way. You know, we try to triangulate the entire artistic process, you know, and like sort of bringing it all into the center to sort of figure out what we really like.
Yeah. If there's a connection between both of you, aside from music, it's that you both get the chance to work with top producers. And so I'll start this with you. How does Dan, This Is Us, inspire you as a composer? What does he bring to the table that you take, as you say, as sort of the invisible play, as the visible sort of player, music-wise, to his series?
Well, I mean, it starts with, you know, where this material is coming from, and This Is Us is as much, you know, is very much, you know, not quite literally, but it's very much inspired by his own life and his own experiences, and he's a very good friend of mine, and I've known him since college, and so when I read the scripts or when I see the show, I know this is coming from, you know, I know it's coming from, you know, his own perspective. You know, a lot of people will create shows that come from a larger worldview of something. But his specifically comes from something deeply personal. And because of that, it's incredibly emotive. And I know when I'm scoring a scene about Jack and how the family is dealing with the loss of Jack, I know this is tying into something personal that Dan experienced, you know, when he lost his mom, and he's shared that. And so for me, when I'm scoring the show, I'm scoring it for him sometimes as much as I am, you know, for the audience.
And Jeff, in your case, Noah Hawley, who is an absolutely brilliant talent, as we've seen with Fargo and Legion, which is coming to a close this year on FX, what's it like continuing to work with him?
You know, he is a very interesting storyteller. He's a really interesting storyteller. He loves to play with the idea of, you know, linear storytelling versus nonlinear storytelling. And we really do share, you know, a lot of the same loves of certain types of music. You know, we've gone from so many different from so much in terms of eclectic sounding music to non-eclectic sounding music. I mean, we've gone for all the way from like bagpipes to say big string orchestras, and he tends to really allow me a lot of latitude in terms of trying to get the story across. And the way he likes to use music is really we share that same sort of ideal in terms of how we like to use music to picture. So it was really fortunate that we got to hook up when we did 10 years ago, and it's really been sort of an artistic windfall for me. It's really a great experience.
And that's the other connection, too, is both of you have done shows involving Marvel, you know, in Zoth's case, Runaways, in your case, Legion, which I said is coming to a close later this year on FX. Great, great series, by the way, and I think really should be more appreciated by people than it is, and by critics in particular. It's an amazing, amazing series. And so is Runaways, too, by the way, which is doing very well in season number two on Hulu, and I think it's going to get a third season any day now. So, Arthur, when Jeff was here last time, I asked about, you know, the composers that influenced his career. What composers influenced your career?
For me, it was the music I grew up listening to. You know, I grew up, you know, my parents came from India to the United States in the late 70s, and so I'm a kind of first-generation born American here, but I grew up listening to all this Indian music that they brought with them from India, and there were these amazing composers from their music that they listened to in the 60s and 70s. You know, S.D. Burman, R.D. Burman. These were India's kind of, you know, film composers that were writing these songs for film, and the music was just stunning. And so that really, you know, has become part of my. It has just become part of my, you know, my musical approach to many things I do. It's subtly in there. I mean, if you listen to the This Is Us score, you know, you will hear a lot of Indian influence in that music, and so a lot of it comes from there. You know, there was even growing, I mean, I love, you know, just like Jeff is such a purist with the way he approaches his scores. I tried the same thing too. You know, I want stuff to feel like it's, I want it to feel incredibly original, like it's its own thing, like we've made it ourselves. I mean, I mean, whether I'm kind of banging on a table to make the sound of the percussion on This Is Us, or who knows, one day I might take the sound of like the meow of a kitten or something and run it through all the sorts of delays and reverb, and it becomes this sound for like a horror film. You don't even know, you know. So you just, there's an idea, you can be influenced by so much of your environment. And I think you need to be open to that, you know. And so for me, a lot of the influence came from these Indian composers when I was younger. You know, obviously I look up to composers like Alexander Desplat, you know, and people like that, who I find take a very original approach and interesting approach to their work.
And speaking of something original, here's a call. Hello, you're on from Broadway Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, Simon. This is Rick Webb calling from Philadelphia.
Rick, it's good to have you on. It's been quite a while, so floor is yours.
Hey, guys. I'm wondering, how important is it to actually be able to read and write music to be a composer nowadays with, like, transcription software or maybe hiring other people? Because it seems like a lot of, like, rock and roll guys now are making it into composing.
You know, it's interesting you say that. First, wait, did you say you were from Philly?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, I'm going to have a cheesesteak today, my friend, because Philly cheesesteaks are my favorite.
I went to college in Philly, so I hear you, Jeff.
You know, my background is from being in a rock band. You know, I was in a rock band for 20 years, and I learned how to, you know, use a workstation, Pro Tools in the recording studio as well, recording my band. And I know Sid is also, you know, comes from a performing artist and rock band type situation in the same way I did. And, you know, I think that it was just sort of a natural progression using Pro Tools for at least for me, because I was always recording live music. And that was where I sort of, headed into, you know, writing music for films and TV. So for me, it is interesting that I'm, you know, one of, and I would say not too few, but I would say one of certainly a minority of composers here in Los Angeles who sequence in Pro Tools, simply because that's what I learned first, you know?
Cool.
Yeah. I'm the same way too. And I mean, to your question, I don't know if, just to correct me if I'm wrong, but your question specifically was about, do you need to have the ability to transcribe scores? Is that what you're saying? Could you repeat your question?
Yeah, like people like Paul McCartney sometimes get interviewed and he says, I don't know, I never wrote it down, I just played it.
Yeah,
so
and that's
how
that's,
important
that's,
is it to be able to read
yeah,
and write?
You know, I mean, having that sort of that literacy in music can never hurt you. Do I think it's a requirement? No. I mean, I'm in that minority that is not entirely literate either in reading and writing music. I do it all by feel. I sequence in Pro Tools very much like Jeff does. And for me, I think the most important thing that you can bring to the table as a composer is how you're connecting emotionally through your music ultimately. You know, and whether you've written it down for someone else to play it or whether you have the luxury of having someone to help you orchestrate your themes and ideas. You know, I think that ultimately it's how you're playing the notes and what notes you're picking and the order that you're playing them in. You know, I think that's really a big part of it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Sid. You know, I'm not classically trained. I never really took any lessons on instruments or music theory, but you just sort of find your way through it. And as long as you have an idea as to what you like to hear melodically and harmonically, you know, I think that's the most important thing. You know, and certainly what Sid is saying is, you know, being emotionally connected and having that be emotionally moving and connecting with someone who, the, you know, with a listener, I think is the most important thing. Certainly more important than any sort of technical knowledge. Technical knowledge helps you get the job done, but it doesn't help you write the really great theme. You know, only what's inside does that.
Cool. Well, thank you both very much, and that's actually an inspirational answer for me that can't read or write music. So maybe someday all my musical skills might get me in the business. So thank you very much.
Well, good luck with it all. Yep.
Thank you. Thanks, guys, and thanks, Simon. Have a great weekend.
You too, Rick. And congratulations on how the Phillies are starting this year with Bryce Harper. Get yourself some Philly cheesesteaks for that team. They're off to a great start.
Thank you.
Rick Bell, our friend from Philadelphia, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. If you want to catch the latest music from Mr. Russo, check out The Umbrella Academy, now in its first season, going into a second next year on Netflix. For more details about that, www.netflix.com. And you can catch Sinatra's music every week on Tuesday nights on NBC's This Is Us. For more details, NBC.com. Jeff, Siddhartha, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on this half hour. Let's all team up again down the road. Jeff, all the very best. Continued success with you on the Umbrella Academy in Fargo. Siddhartha, all the very best with you, Dan and crew, on This Is Us. Please give Dan our best. He was with us when he did The Neighbors on ABC. And one of these days, we've got to have him get him back to talk more about This Is Us. It's been a fantastic success. And to both of you, all the very best. It's been a darn pleasure to have you with us again.
Thanks so much.
Well, thanks so much for having us. Yep.
You are welcome, Jeff Stark. Take care. Have a super weekend.
You too, man.
Too.
Bye, Jeff.
Russo, Siddhartha Kosler, joining us live from Los Angeles on Tomorrow Be Televised. Unfortunately, because we're running out of time, we're not going to do the commentary about the two events you'll be keeping an eye for on your radar screen next week: the National Association Broadcast Convention in Las Vegas and NIF, the International Plumbing Fair in Cannes, France. But we will have that commentary for you on Monday, when among our guests we will have William Singer from the Preview Channel. That's next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast on iTunes, the Apple TV and Spreaker podcast app, and, of course, on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network at iHeartRadio.com. We'd love to hear from you. What are you about our guest today? What's your thoughts for where TV's at and where it's going? So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's how you get involved in our commentary question of the week. This is Movie on DVD is in play. We didn't get a chance again to give you the question again, so catch you tomorrow morning on Facebook and follow up on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, we love hearing from you because what you say matters. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not those of the Blog Talk Radio speaker and iHeartRadio. Our production associate, BTR, is Candace Williams. Andy So is Blog Talk Radio's general manager. Jay Stosberg is executive content producer. And the co-founders are Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow Be Televised is brought to you by Audible.com, proud development partner of the annual New York Television Festival and an Amazon company. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. For three free audiobooks and a one-month trial, or you can annual subscription and save $50 off the price today only, audibletrial.com/televised. But Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic weekend ahead. We're back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio speaker and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to this weekend, please make it safe and make it great. Until the next time, stay well, stay tuned, and face the music.